Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the Winslow Leach Building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd, and co-host, Phyllis Floyd. Tonight's topic, the Funhouse. Well, hey everybody, good evening and welcome back to the old podcast. Hey, Phyllis.
Hi, Rob.
We're going to talk about one of my all-time favorite early 80s horror movies, The Funhouse. Man, I love this movie.
I love this movie, too. And honestly, you actually have a lot of favorites.
Well, yeah, I do. I do. But for this year, 1981, this is my favorite 1981 horror movie.
Fair enough.
This is one of those that I can watch over and over again and never get tired of, you know?
Yes.
Hey, but before we get into that, upcoming stuff in the area here, if you happen to live in or are within driving distance of Tidewater area of Virginia, i.e. Norfolk, Virginia or Chesapeake, some cool things coming up here in the next few weeks and into October. September 16th at the Narrow on Colley Avenue in Ghent, the section of Norfolk, I'll be hosting The Fifth Element. If you haven't seen that in a theater, you get a chance to see it in a great old historic theater. And coming up October 1st is Monster Fest in Chesapeake, Virginia. Cedar Road at the Chesapeake Library, our annual one-day horror convention event in our 13th year now.
Monster Fest the 13th.
That's right, Monster Fest the 13th. We've got a lot of good panels this year, which we'll be posting online soon if you check Monster Fest on Facebook. And if you check Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion on Facebook. All the upcoming events and movie things that we're doing. After Monster Fest, oh, and also that night we're showing two classic horror films up on the big screen to be announced. And later in the month, on the 14th of October, I'll be hosting Return of the Living Dead at the Narrow, which is going to be cool. We have some surprises planned with that. And then it keeps coming. Halloween weekend is going to be busy and full of cool stuff to do. The Friday and Saturday before Halloween, which will be the 28th and the 29th.
Yep.
We're showing at 9 o'clock the original Halloween on both nights. So you got two chances to check that out in a theater if you've never seen it before. And on October 30th, that's Sunday, the night before Halloween, Terror Tease, a horror tribute in burlesque at the Narrow. That's right, live old-time burlesque-themed horror acts. It's going to be amazing. And during intermission, we're showing classic horror trailers. So it's going to be a fun night. Tickets are available online if you go to the events page on Facebook. There's a link to, I guess, I think Brown Paper Tickets. You can get tickets in advance to the burlesque show, or you can get them at the box office at the Narrow. So that's all the upcoming stuff in the area here. Let's get back to the Funhouse, which is what we came here to talk about to begin with.
Indeed.
Yeah, this is like I said before, I love this movie. I can watch it over and over again. And if I had time, I'd watch it tonight after we get done. This is a great Tobe Hooper film, which... Tobe Hooper's kind of weird, in my opinion, and not in a bad way, but a lot of directors, you can really kind of tell their films from film to film that they directed it. And I'm not sure you can with Tobe Hooper. I mean, other people might have a difference of opinion, and if you do, if you think you can, or you think I'm full of crap, drop us a line on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page and let us know. But it seems to me his movies, which is a good thing in a way, are very different from one another in as far as the way they're pacing and the way they move.
Yeah, well, for the longest time, I didn't know this was a Tobe Hooper
film. Yeah.
Because, like you said, it just doesn't really...
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody knows Texas Chainsaw.
Right.
You know, he did Chainsaw. And a lot of people know he did Poltergeist.
Yeah.
Which are two totally different films.
Yeah.
In theme and tone and everything. But he also did Eaten Alive, which is one we should probably talk about on here at some point. Bizarre film. Salem's Lot, he did.
Oh, I didn't know he did.
Yeah. Life Force, which is a kind of a cool film. And the remake of Invaders from Mars, he did that, which I think we showed at Phantasma not long ago, a year or so ago.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long.
I found this out recently, though. He also directed the Billy Idol video, Dancing with Myself. And some of the props that were used in that video were actually props from the movie Funhouse.
Huh.
So I need to go back and watch that and see if I can spot stuff. But, you know, man, he's a rock solid director, though, because all of those films, you know, pretty good films.
Yeah.
You know, and quite a few of them are very popular, you know, except for maybe Eaten Alive. And, you know, Life Force has got kind of a cult following, but it's not up there like Poltergeist and Chainsaw, you know.
Yeah.
You can get a good product from him anyway. regardless of what the movie
is. That is true. You're always going to get something you can enjoy.
Oh, yeah. Now, the cast of this thing is interesting as far as who's in it and what else they've done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my favorite cast member, God, I didn't write down the guy's name, and I should have because I can't remember it, but the Carnival Barker.
Oh, right.
That guy. And he's done quite a bit of work, mm-hmm. but it's nothing you know. I mean,
he's the one that plays a couple of roles,
he
right?
plays all yeah. three Carnival Barkers.
Oh, that's right.
For okay. each of the different attractions.
Yes.
Which leads you to kind of think that they're all inbred.
Yeah.
Alive, alive, alive. You'll be saying that all night long after you see the movie. I did read something, though, about this, doing a little research, that he said he would take the role of the Carnival Barker if he could play all three of them.
Oh.
So, and I need to go back and read the book, because I'm not sure if it is something about them all being related or not.
So have you read the book before?
You know, I started to read the book a while back, and I got sidetracked like I do.
Yeah.
And I've never got back to it, and I need to get back to it, because also...
it's funny, the past few podcasts we've done, we've talked about the books for it, and you haven't read any of them yet, Rob.
I've got them, and there's a lot of them I've started to read, and then, like I said, I'll get distracted with stuff I've got to do, events or whatever, or something else, and I'll put it back on the shelf, and I just won't get back to it.
Yeah.
And I mean to.
You'll get there.
Yeah, I will eventually. But I did find out the interesting thing, though, about the novelization of this was written, the movie was written first.
Mm-hmm.
And then the novelization was written while the movie was in production or post-production, but because of delays and release of it, the book got released first.
Huh.
So people think the movie was based on a book, but it wasn't.
But it's really the other way around.
Mm-hmm. And another interesting thing, though, about the novelization about this, it was written by a guy named Owen West.
Who is Owen West, Rob?
It's a pseudonym for Dean Koontz.
Oh, well, isn't that interesting?
So, if you're a Dean Koontz fan, seek out the book Funhouse and read it and see if it reads like his stuff. The book actually has a lot more backstory, though, in the carnival. I want to say the relationship between the main girl and her family and the carnival.
Oh, wow.
Something that's never touched on in the movie.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to read, because there's a lot of stuff going on in there behind the scenes, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, so I really need it. I ought to try to dig that out for the Halloween season and see if I can have a chance to read that again. But anyway, I think I was getting ready. I was talking about the cast.
Yes, so
I was
getting ready to talk about the cast.
The lead girl in this, Elizabeth Berridge, very healthy girl, lovely girl. And you see how healthy she is in another role she had not long after this. She was the wife of Amadeus.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
I can see that now. I totally didn't put that together.
But in this, she's the sister of the young kid at the very beginning, and a great homage to Psycho shower scene.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole opening actually is an homage to Halloween and Psycho.
Right, I can see that.
And the opening is shot so great. Looking through the eyes of that mask.
Yes, that's amazing.
And of course, I just go, oh, every time the opening of this movie, it pans around this kid's room and the posters on the wall and the monster
the toys
and all this stuff. It's like, oh, had it, need it, need it, have it. Oh, God, need one of those, you know. It's great. And then when he puts the mask on, it's shot through the eye holes of the mask, walking down the hall, looking in the different rooms and stuff. It's really cool, and it sets a tone and a mood. Interesting fact I have found out, too, is some of the props in the boys' room actually belong to Sherry Lewis. Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because especially like the ventriloquist dummy that the eyes move, that he makes move. Yeah, some of that stuff. The executive producer was a friend of hers.
Oh, I was going to say, what's the relationship there? Why the Lamb Chop chick?
Who would think? Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop and Funhouse.
Not so much.
But yeah, Sherry Lewis. Mm. But yeah, some great stuff there. And that whole opening is really cool. And of course, you know, boom, right off the bat, we get some nudity, which is always good at the beginning of a horror film.
Can't go wrong with that
for
a horror film.
It's a great way to start off any movie, really. But particularly a horror film, you're like, all right.
Now you're in.
Then you get a little nudity a little later on. Not much. A couple quick, brief glimpses. So it's not like somewhere, you know, there's a lot of it and they get killed right after they have sex.
Right.
It's not one of those, really. But the other people in the cast of note, Cooper Huckabee, this girl's boyfriend who comes to pick her up, the young tough of the film. And he's done some other stuff, I saw him, or we both saw him actually, about a year ago, mm-hmm. show up in True Blood.
What did he do in True Blood?
Well, you know, we were way behind. We were watching on DVD.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the guy. He was what is it? The changeling guy, Sam.
Yeah.
The kid, the werewolf kid that he takes, who is his brother? Was it his stepbrother or his brother or something? Anyway, it was his dad.
Oh.
Remember?
Huh.
We saw him, and I'm like,
I'd have to see it again.
That guy looks so familiar. Where did I know him from? But he's so much older now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's been a long time since then.
His name is Cooper Huckabee.
Interesting.
That's a name for you right there. I would have changed that if it was me again.
Well, it's memorable.
Yeah, I didn't get him a lot of work though. Sylvia Miles, mm-hmm. another one of note from the horror genre. She had done a lot, a little bit, and here and there over the years. But for our interest, she was in The Sentinel.
Mm.
Remember that film?
I do.
From the 70s about that apartment building?
Yeah.
She was the German, whatever, neighbor, and Beverly D'Angelo was like her girlfriend who never spoke.
Right.
So that's where we saw her before. But the other cast member, that it's just weird that he's in this because, you know, he's done very odd little bits here and there. But one of my favorites all time, William Finley. The Phantom of the Paradise himself, yes. And he's got one of the greatest scenes in the movie, though. One of the most fun scenes. He's one of the cheap carny actors mm-hmm. in one of the bits where, in a classic carny, not really sideshow bit, I guess call it a sideshow bit.
Yeah, maybe.
Where you go into a tent and the guy gives a speech about Vlad the Impaler and Dracula. He's dressed kind of like a vampire and he has this coffin, which is supposed to be this ancient coffin, you know, magic illusion trick. And he gets a volunteer from the audience and she goes up there and he closes it and there's a little window for her face. And they ask her if she's comfortable and he hammers a stake in the little hole in the coffin through her heart and she coughs up blood. The audience freaks out. The lights go out. The lights come up. He opens a coffin and she steps out of it in like a, you know, a magic assistant's outfit.
Right.
And of course she was a plant. It's his daughter. And next show in 20 minutes. Yeah, it was that quick. But his whole bit where he's giving his little talk and his speech, and he's like, he's selling it, but he's kind of half-assing it because it's so routine to him, but he's going for it. He's not backing down. You know, it's great.
No, he owned it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny because when you told what building we were in, I had momentarily forgotten completely, and I was like, oh, I get it now.
Exactly. But that's after they get to the funhouse, and I'm not going to go into the whole plot of the movie, but basically is the kids go to the fun. They go to the carnival. They decide to be a gas to spend the night in the fun house.
Right.
And
sneak in and stay overnight.
And stay overnight in the fun house, kind of daring each other to do it. And they witness something go down, and then they are caught that they've witnessed it. And mm-hmm. the rest of the movie is them trying to get out. And right. they can't get. This is the biggest traveling funhouse I've ever seen in my life. I've worked in a haunted attraction before. I've worked in a one that's been there for 30 years that didn't move, and it wasn't as big as this place that packs up and goes from town to town like every other week or so. This place was amazing. It had a living quarters and had two levels or three levels.
Yeah, it was insane.
You know, man.
I can't even imagine the amount of breakdown and setup it takes for just that piece of the entire carnival.
There's some really cool scenes, though. One of the really cool scenes where they go into the sideshow and they see like the split face, two-headed calf, and mm-hmm. some of the other oddities, and they go in this one tent where it has these things in jars, and they see this one infant or aborted infant in a big jar, and it's got kind of a split face, kind of like the monster.
Yeah.
But it's in a formaldehyde jar or whatever, and do his eyes open at the end? I can't remember.
Seems like they do, but I don't know if that's just me remembering it that way.
Anyway, but it looks suspiciously like the monster that's in the film, the rest of the film.
Right.
So it's like, oh, was this the first one that they had and it didn't live, and this is, you know.
Yeah.
And then say, well, we'll just put them on display, you know.
I think at some point, somebody.
They say something about
something
your brother.
About your brother or their didn't make it. Or, I can't remember exactly what they said, but there was some allusion to that.
But man, this really, the mood and the atmosphere of this thing really sells you this down and dirty, scuzzy traveling carnival.
Right.
Even, especially the bathrooms, the portable bathrooms trailer they've got set up.
Yeah.
Or tent or whatever it is. And this is one of those old-time carnivals where they had a traveling hoochie-coochie show, a stripper show, which you won't see in a traveling carnival anymore.
Nope.
Complete with all the patched holes that were cut in so people could look in through the back without having to pay. A lot of attention to detail in that. But then it's great that, like I said earlier, the three carnival barkers that are distinctly very different in appearance.
Yeah.
But it's played by the same guy, so they all have the same features and look like it's the inbred carnival, you know?
Yeah.
Alive, alive, alive. Trying to sell you that, get you to buy that extra ticket, you know?
Anything they can do, make a buck.
Oh, yeah. You got to see this movie. This is, and I say it on just about every one of these. If you haven't seen this film, go out and get it and watch it. And, you know, and draw your own conclusions, like with any of these films. But this one, I highly recommend this one. This one's a lot of fun. And there's a lot of horror came out in the early, mid-80s. And then it kind of degenerated into, you know, the Freddy Nightmare series and the Jason series got really kind of silly, campy and silly. I mean, you know, Jason Takes Manhattan, and then Freddy was just kind of a comedian that killed people is what he turned into, you know. Yeah. And then they're clones of stuff like that. But there's gems throughout that, and this is one of them. Another early one, early 80s, The Burning.
Oh, right.
Is another one. That was a summer camp one, mm-hmm. but it's different from a lot of the rest of them.
Yeah, it stands out.
Yeah. And we should do that one at some point, too. Talk about that
one. We shall have to.
Yeah. But definitely check out Funhouse here. Now, that opening, I can't get over. I'll talk about that again. That's really cool. You know?
Well, and some people say, in your mind.
Yeah, well, some people say, oh, it's a ripoff. No, it was an on-purpose homage to these two films.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of get you. And I think, aren't they watching, like, Bride of Frankenstein, the parents down in the living room or something?
I think so.
And the kid's got, like, an AHI Frankenstein?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, I think he drops, and it hurt my heart when I saw it hit the floor.
You know? Don't hurt it.
But there's a lot of little things to get you in the mood for what's coming, yeah. You know?
Well, like you said earlier about attention to detail about the carnival, there was a lot of attention to detail just throughout the entire film, not just in the carnival itself.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Except that the car they're driving.
Well, you know.
It changes.
Yeah.
When he picks her up at her house.
I'd forgotten that.
It's a 66 Pontiac something. I can't remember what it is. But when they pull up to the carnival and park, mm-hmm. you can see that it's a 67 Pontiac something else. The grill is different.
Oh.
And I think the first one was convertible and this is a hard top or something like that.
That's funny. I'd forgotten all about that.
I have to look that up and get the verification on that. But that's one of the only like blooper things of it. But the attention to detail of everything else. I mean, it really looks like they've rented out a trashy carnival and filmed it there. It doesn't look like it's a set, you know, for that they built it for this.
Well, that's actually a good question. Is there anything in your research that talks about the carnival they used? I mean, did they use a carnival or did they build a set?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure they rented all the rides and stuff.
Yeah.
But it looks, no, it just said it was filmed, I think, in Miami because I think the child labor laws for working are a little more lax there. And most of the cast were younger.
Right.
You know, like the kid and the people in the funhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, earlier you mentioned that there's a monster, but we didn't really talk about that because we're not going through the whole plot. But the monster is not so much a monster. He just has monstrous features.
Yeah, he's a mutant. He was born with his mutated split face and claw hands and stuff.
And they kind of allude to it being an inbreeding thing, right?
Yeah, I think so, a little bit.
Yeah.
But the coolest thing at the beginning.
It looks awesome.
Yeah, he's walking around throughout the whole beginning, and he's leading people into the funhouse, like pushing the cars through at the beginning.
Yeah, he's wearing like
a mask. Wearing a Frankenstein mask, which is really cool. And it's one I've never seen before. So I'm wondering, I wonder if they had it made for the movie to actually go over the makeup.
Oh, maybe.
You know, to be that big to fit.
Yeah, because it was pretty big.
Yeah, and it's one, like I said, I've never seen it anywhere before.
Yeah.
And I've looked.
Well, Rob tends to really like monster movies anyway, so this gives enough monster movie, and he's a big carnival buff, so.
Oh, yeah. So it's double fun.
Everything about this
for me.
Movie just screams Rob.
Oh, yeah. It's double fun for me. You know, it's a great monster kid film.
Yes.
One, because it's not a slasher film.
Right.
You know, it's not a serial killer film, slasher film. It's a creature.
Yeah.
You know,
and he's not just a bad guy. He's not just an evil, brainless creature.
He's abused by his father.
Yeah, yeah. So he's a truly sympathetic character, you know, and as opposed to what's so popular now, it seems like, is making villains have sympathetic.
Yeah. Well, this is a sympathetic character that gets turned into the bad guy, and his father's really the villain of the piece.
His dad is a
beast. He's the evil son of a bitch. Yeah, he really is. Oh, another really cool thing I found out about this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Tobe Hooper wanted Andrew Laszlo to be the cinematographer for this.
Okay.
Because he really liked his work, the lighting he did in Walter Hill's The Warriors.
Uh-huh.
So there's another reason why I like the look of this film so much that I didn't know before.
Right.
Because it has that lighting that's, you know, which really sets the, made me think about The Warriors, the whole thing's at night pretty much, and it has a distinct mood throughout the whole film, and that's because it's the way it's shot, you know, and the cinematography in this is great.
Yeah.
You know, and so is The Warriors.
Indeed. It definitely gives you that same sense of foreboding and curiosity, and you feel like you're kind of there with them. The whole thing, it's done really well all the way around.
Yeah, the only thing about it is the funhouse, it seems like it's huge, like it's as big as the carnival lot almost.
Yeah.
You never get a sense of the proportions of it.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. You don't. But I'll tell you, while I thought that on occasion, I mean,
you don't think about it while you're watching.
No, you don't. I mean, and I don't know that I ever thought about it until after. Right.
Yeah, after the fact, you go, man, that was a big
one. We've seen this movie a lot.
Yeah, but it does. It moves at a great clip, and it keeps you going the whole time. You know, you're never bored at any point in this film.
No.
You're kind of on the edge of your seat at some points. I don't think there's any jump scares. But there is quite a bit of suspense.
There's a couple.
Yeah. I remember before I ever saw this, though, because I think when this came out, I was too young. I couldn't go to horror movies by myself. Mm-hmm. And, of course, my folks wouldn't take me to them.
Right.
I only saw a couple of horror movies that my folks took me to when I was young. And The De Laurentiis' King Kong was one. Mm-hmm. But not hardly any at all until I got older and, like, my parents could drop me off at the theater.
Right.
You know, and just say, yeah, he can go see a rated R movie. Let him in.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I have an odd history when it comes to film and television shows. But for some reason, and I don't know how this happened, but my brother rented on VHS, of course, Poltergeist. So that's one of the first horror movies that I remember watching.
And see, when I was a kid, I had no interest in Poltergeist, watching that movie, because it was like, I liked The Wolfman, Frankenstein, Godzilla, and I like, that's just about ghosts. Yeah. Who cares about that? That's just ghosts. That's not a monster.
Ghostesses?
There's ghostesses. but you know, older now, I can appreciate it. It's a damn good movie, you know.
Yeah.
But I still prefer monsters.
Well, sure. And I do, too.
Now, there are some really good haunted house films out there that we probably will do podcasts on in the future, like Legend of Hell House, definitely, The Haunting, the original. And we need to go back and watch Let's Scare Jessica to Death again. Give it another shot. And we'll watch it with Jessica. And give it another shot, because the first viewing, I didn't really care for it, but I keep, over the years, I've read so many things about how good a film it is.
Well, I can assure you that it did not scare Jessica to death.
It barely kept her awake.
Yeah.
Man. Oh, what I was going to say, though, is I remember as a kid, you know, I never got to see this because this was 81. So, I was like 12, maybe? Something
Sounds
like that?
Good.
Anyway, but I remember seeing pictures in Famous Monsters for this.
For the funhouse?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. God, I always remember the issue. I bet that was the same issue that had the Devil and Max Devlin on the cover and had a little inset. I think this is the issue. Cosby is the devil, big on the cover, and a little inset of the Funhouse Monster. I could be wrong. Hey, if you know that I'm wrong, drop us a line. Throw something there on the Phantasm After our Facebook page and tell me I'm wrong. Or tell me, hey, yeah, you were right.
What issue was that? We want to know.
Yeah, but I think that was the issue. And I just distinctly can see there was a picture of the monster in it. You know, they gave that away. And there was a picture of the guy, the kid, Richie. Mm-hmm. In the little funhouse car with the axe in his head.
Oh, okay.
You know, all the ropes all draped all over him and stuff.
Yeah.
Those things really stick out in my head from seeing that before I ever saw the movie.
Before you ever saw the movie.
Yeah, that made me want to see the movie.
Right.
I've always liked that design. I think it was Rob Bottin who designed it. Or either, I think Rick Baker designed it. And
the
Rob,
makeup?
Yeah, and Rob Bottin made it. I have to look that up. I should have looked that up already. Hey, you look that up and drop us a line. but no, I think that's what it was. But I've always liked that design. I think it was Rick Baker, which makes a lot of sense because I like a lot of stuff that he's done, you know.
Of course.
And of course, a couple years ago, I finally got the mask, yes. Courtesy of Brother Sayer there. Clayton sent me in a box of love, a surprise one day opened up, and there's the Funhouse mask staring at me. I have to post a picture of the mannequin I made from that, which will be on display at Monster Fest this year, along with a few other live giant life-size monsters. Come take your picture with. How's that for a plug? Huh?
There you go.
Oh, here's what I was going to say. This is a surprise for you.
Okay. Surprise me.
Well, before I get to that, you know how at the very end of the film, the big fat lady at the funhouse is laughing?
Oh, yeah.
That was on purpose.
Okay.
Because it ain't over till the fat lady sings.
Oh, right. Well, that makes sense. So the laughing.
Yeah. So they did it on purpose. But that's part of what I was kind of segues into.
Okay.
Somebody did, you know, production sketches, concept art for this movie. Toby Hooper hired an artist to do that. And that artist was comics legend Neil Adams.
No way.
Yes. One of the most influential and favorite artists of the Silver and the Bronze Age of comics, who's still working today. Neil Adams did some concept sketches for that, and I have it right here.
How awesome.
If you get his book called Neil Adams Monsters, it's a great graphic novel that has to do with the Dracula, Frankenstein, the Wolfman, and it's his take on all that. It's pretty cool. But the reason to get it is because in the back of the book, there's a section of his production sketches he did for movies, and he did quite a few things. He did From Beyond, the Stuart Gordon film, Lovecraft's From Beyond. He did some concept sketches for the monster and some storyboard stuff for that.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's just great though. Art, and some of it's in color. Some of the, you know, he painted it, colored it out. Some of it's just pencil sketches and all. Then he did some other covers from Marvel and DC, some monster stuff. Show some of his covers from Deadly Hands of Kung Fu and Marvel Preview and all that. But then you turn the page and there's production sketches for Funhouse.
Oh, no way. That's awesome.
And kind of his take, because I guess he just had descriptions or just had the script, and script might have been not have been very descriptive of the monster. Because his drawing of the monster here looks a little more like Frankenstein with stitches across the bisecting the face, kind of.
Okay.
And kind of like the vest, and he's leaning over, kind of hunched. But the really cool thing is he drew the front of the funhouse and has the big fat lady in the polka dot dress.
Huh.
And, you know, the words thrills, chills, spills that are on the front of the funhouse. But the coolest thing is he has almost the complete layout of the funhouse drawn out here. So you get to see... According to, now, I don't know, they changed it for this, and it doesn't have a person to show the scale, but it shows the layout of the track and how there is an upstairs and how the area with the cogs and the wheel at the in the motor, it looks like that's a third level, like a lower, like it's a three level and there's a basement level.
Right.
Which shows how the track kind of goes up over that. So it's kind of not really a third level, but anyway, it gives you more of a perspective on what the place looked like.
That is really cool. I can't believe you've never shown me that before.
It just, boom, just hadn't thought about it, but there it is right there.
We'll have to see if any of that is online. Maybe you can post
it. Yeah, I believe it is. I'll put some of this on the, when I post the album with the pictures from all the stuff
that is really
this podcast.
Cool to see.
I'll put this on there as much as I can. But yeah, this book, if you can get it, I'm sure it's still available. Neil Adams Monsters. Matter of fact, I think he is going to be. Is he going to be at the Richmond Comic Con
or
Hampton Comic Con?
Something about that
coming up soon. One of them, I think, is October 15th, isn't it?
The one in, I think it's in Richmond. But it's called Virginia.
Virginia Comic Con. Okay,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I believe Neil Adams is going to be that. So if you get this book, you can have him sign it. So there you go. And he's a really nice guy. We met him at Dragon Con a few years ago, and hell of a nice guy. Not pretentious at all. And just an amazing artist. I mean, he's the guy that kind of brought Batman out of the campy 50s and 60s stuff into the 70s, more Dark Knight Avenger, gritty, long before Frank Miller. And typically the Batman that everybody kind of remembers in comics, you know, him and Denny O'Neil, I believe. But yeah, this movie, it just, I think Funhouse came out on Blu-ray recently too, or within the last year, mm-hmm. or a couple of, I don't know, it hadn't been that long.
Right.
Well, that it's sure been out on Blu-ray. And we need to get that. We've got it on DVD, but I would love to have it on Blu-ray.
Of course.
I believe the copy we have, I don't think there's any extras or anything. I'm not sure if there's any on the Blu-ray. I'm sure there's a commentary, but I don't think there's any behind the scenes or, you know, lost footage and all. I know they did have to go back at some point and do some reshoots because a couple of days' footage was actually lost.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think they were filming it during the Teamsters strike or something down in Florida, and something happened along the way, and they lost some of the footage, so they had to go back and do some reshoots.
Wow.
I know the opening sequence was shot after the film was made. After everything else was done, they went back to shoot the opening sequence with the kid and the mask, and Elizabeth Barrage topless taking a shower. It's just gorgeous. It gives you that nod and wink back to the old school horror film. You know, it's the Psycho era, and then bring you up into the Halloween, which was just a few years before this, and boom, then we're set into Funhouse. This is one of those, I think it was received pretty good. We showed it at Phantasmo a few years ago. I believe everybody enjoyed it, liked it.
I can't remember, but I don't remember anything bad about it, so we'll just say so.
It's one I would show again, you know, and I'd love to see it in the theater. It is still, as far as I know, still in print. Mm-hmm. On DVD, and the Blu-ray, like I said, came out not too long ago, so that's still available. Should be able to pick that up on Amazon. I'm not sure if it's streaming anywhere. It's not on Netflix. I don't think it's on Roku anywhere, not that I know of, Hulu, any of that, but it's easy enough to get and well worth it. If you like classic horror, it's not that gory like a lot of the modern stuff. It's, you know, a couple of little scenes.
Yeah, but it's not bad.
Yeah, it's more suspenseful than anything else. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely an early 80s horror film and one of the best, you know, from that era there. Still holds up today. A lot of fun. Great to watch at a party, Halloween party with a bunch of people. And highly recommended from us.
Indeed.
Indeed. And, you know, man, this is going to be a short one because there's not a whole lot to say about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
other than how good it is.
Yeah. Well, and we've tried not to go into all the plot points because there's a whole lot of really cool scenes. There's a lot of, you know, cool plot points and stuff we could talk about. But
We don't want to sit here and just tell you the story, you know. I mean, right. We end up doing that on a few of these just because we get involved in it and we keep going. And you just keep going and talking about it. But, you know, you can watch the movie and see that for yourself. And, I could point out some individual scenes, but the whole thing is from scene to scene, there's great scenes.
Yeah.
You know, there's one, I'll tell you one thing I'll say real quick. There's one scene I don't really understand.
Okay.
The little kid, he surprises his sister in the shower doing the psycho bit, and she gets pissed off and says, you know, I was going to take you to the carnival, but I'm not going to do it. And when I go tonight with my friends, you know, you think about that I'm not going to take you tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to go anyway, so he sneaks out of the house after his parents fall asleep.
Right.
And walks to the carnival.
Yes.
I don't know how far away it is.
They don't give us any clue.
But this truck stops along the way and offers him a ride. And he's a little kid, can't be more than 11 or 12.
Yeah, that was my guess.
Something like that, 10. And it's this old guy, and he offers him a ride, and he looks at him, and the old guy reaches back on the seat and pulls out a shotgun and points it at him. And the little kid runs off, you know, screaming, and the old guy's just laughing like he was, you know, he was just trying to scare the kid.
Yeah.
But he's laughing. I just don't understand why that scene was there.
Why was that even left in the movie?
Yeah, why it was there, where it's coming from, is, you know, what's it? Don't hitchhike, kids. Is it a public service announcement?
Well, to be completely honest, I'd totally forgotten that scene, so.
Yeah, I mean, but it doesn't have anything to do with anything else in the movie, and it doesn't really change the tone or it's not foreshadowing or anything, you know. I don't understand. It's kind of a waste of a minute of film, you know, or half a minute.
No, I do not know why they left that in.
I mean, you know, we could have seen more of the carnival or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
more nudity would have been good.
Substitute scared children for nudity.
Hey, when in doubt, go nude. You know, you get a bit of during the stripper, the dancing girl scene,
mm-hmm.
in the tent. You see a little bit of that in the tit tent, and you see a quick flash of Elizabeth Barrage again when they're making out in the funhouse.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's it. There's no lingering shots or anything, which is unfortunate, but. But there's some great shots when she's in the funhouse looking out through the fan.
Yeah.
And can see her parents have come to pick up her brother, and they don't know she's in there, and the little brother can see her. But he's still kind of in shock from being surprised and all that. Or is he just pissed off that, you got pissed off at me, so
I'm going to leave you in the funhouse.
But it's a great point of view shot from her looking down and then from him looking up, you know, right. and the hopelessness of like, oh, it's so close, but so far, I'm almost safe, and there's my parents are my salvation right there, and they're gone. And there's so many other like good shot, the way it's shot around the carnival and stuff.
Yeah.
Do yourself a favor, check it out. Don't take my word for it. Don't take Phyllis's word for it. It's a good film.
It is.
Two thumbs up from us.
You got it.
Now, hey, this is another little sidebar here. And this is, if you're anywhere near Vandergrift, Pennsylvania, next weekend, that is September 9th and 10th, the drive-in, Vegas, the Vandergrift drive-in, does Super Monsterama. You can look that up online. You can look it up on Facebook. They're showing 4 classic horror movies on Friday and 4 classic horror movies on Saturday at this drive-in. It's amazing. We've been, Tony and I, Tony Mercer, the original co-host of Phantasmo After Dark with me, he and I and some other friends, Jim and Craig and Sam, and have been to this thing for a few, you know, we went for a few years and we didn't go last year, and it is amazing. It's this old drive-in in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, and they show these classic horror movies, and it's amazing. I mean, you see great films and some not-so-great films up on the big screen at this drive-in, and everybody that is there for the same reason, because they love these films. In the concession stand, Creepy Classics sets up with DVDs and T-shirts and memorabilia for sale, and Ron Adams, who runs that, is a great guy. Get to meet him, and they run Monster Bash and all that. The concession stand is great drive-in crappy food that you gotta have to have the experience. And it's just the whole thing is, and also Tom Savini's usually there just hanging out watching movies, you know. But the movies they're showing this time is the first night is Horror of the Zombies, Night of the Howling Beast, House of Psychotic Women, and Curse of the Devil. Now, the coolest thing about that is Night of the Howling Beast and Curse of the Devil are both Paul Naschy, Hombre Lobo films. And those do not get shown very often. And I don't think Night of the Howling Beast has even been released in the States officially. You can get a bootleg of it, but to see it at a drive-in, are you kidding me? And then on Saturday, House of Dark Shadows, Night of Dark Shadows, The House That Dripped Blood, and The Bat People. I don't think we're going to make it to that last one on Saturday night. But do yourself a favor. If you get a chance to go out there, they do this every September. I think they do in April also. This is a treat for any classic horror fan. You won't see anything like this too many places. So do yourself a favor, check it out. And hey, we'll be there. So,
Well, you will be.
I'll be there with Tony. And you can hang out and be groovy with us. So just had to pass that along to everybody. And don't forget, if you get a chance, drop us a line at, the Phantasmo email, Phantasmo After Dark. Email this phantasmoad@gmail.com or on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page. And check it out, because I'll put up a trailer for this movie and a lot of pictures for the funhouse.
And maybe a link to the drive-in.
And I will definitely put up a link to the drive-in.
Yes, indeed. Well, before we go, we have to close out with our new segment.
The World Revolves Around Planet of the Apes. Well, we've decreed this. Clayton and I discovered this many, many moons ago, over 20 years ago, probably, that the world revolves around Planet of the Apes. And by that we mean, the game that people started many years ago, 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. Mm-hmm. But we started this before that, and you can connect anything back to Planet of the Apes a lot easier than you can to Kevin Bacon. So.
All right, so the world revolves around Planet of the Apes. So how does the funhouse get related back to Planet of the Apes?
Very easily.
Do tell.
William Finley's in the funhouse.
Indeed.
Paul Williams is in Phantom of the Paradise.
Indeed.
Paul Williams battled Planet of the Apes.
Yes, he was.
Bam!
Well, that was very, very
easy. What you got? You want to do another one? Okay, you take William Finley out of the equation?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll take William Finley out.
Okay.
And we'll go with Sylvia Miles as Gypsy here in Funhouse, right?
Yes.
Sylvia Miles to the Sentinel.
Oh,
Okay.
Okay.
The very end of The Sentinel, the next couple that tries to rent the house,
mm-hmm.
Chris Sarandon is the husband.
Okay.
Chris Sarandon to Fright Night, Roddy McDowell, Planet of the Apes. Good night.
And done. Well, if anybody out there would like to play along on how to relate this to Planet of the Apes, if you have a faster way or a longer way, sometimes it's even fun to see how far you can go.
Yeah. Or you want to try to get me to relate something to back to Planet of the Apes that you don't think I can do. It may take a few minutes for me to think of it, but I'm not researching anything. This is just going through my head.
Yeah, this is all just in Rob's brain.
And anyway, that is the podcast for tonight. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll have a report from the drive-in at the next one. And we'll be talking about another movie. So good night, everybody.
Good night.